Coming today on Negotiate Your Best Life with Rebecca Zung.
We can't determine what happens to us. Life happens. Some people are brought up like I was in a great home and, you know, all the best instruction and, you know, loving family and everything else. Other people come from a broken home. And some people get sick, have an accident, things in life happen, the career doesn't work out, what we had planned or hoped for doesn't take place. And those are beyond our control. But what is in our control is the choices we make regarding what happens to us, right? Dad said that it's always better to respond than to react.
So the big questions are these. How can we navigate and negotiate every situation in our lives, in our career, in our businesses, in our relationships, and even with ourselves for our own self-worth? In other words, what if you could win every time and have no losers? Let's face it, we're not negotiating just to buy a car or for a pay raise. We are negotiating for living in every aspect of our lives. How can we do that powerfully, successfully, and victoriously? Those are the questions, and this podcast will give you the answers. My name is Rebecca Zung, and welcome to the time where you negotiate your best life. Welcome to another episode of Negotiate Your Best Life. I'm Rebecca Zung, and it is my pleasure and my honor today to have Tom Ziegler with me, who is the proud son of Zig Ziegler. And by the way, he looks nearly identical to him. It's kind of eerie and really cool all at the same time. He is now the CEO of Ziegler Incorporated, and he joined the corporation back in 1987 when he was 2 years old. And he began working in warehouse and sales and management, and now he's worked his way up to leadership. He speaks around the world. He hosts the Zig Ziegler Show. He has a book, which we're going to be talking about, which is called Choose to Win, Transform Your Life One Simple Choice at a Time. And he believes you can have everything you want in life if you help others get what they want. And we're going to talk more about that. So thank you so much for joining me, Tom.
Oh, it's great to be here, Rebecca. And I appreciate the opportunity. And boy, I've enjoyed getting to know you just in the last conversations we've had and the work that you're doing. So it's a specialty I haven't interested in, but don't have much experience in. So I'm learning a lot along the way.
How lucky are you?
I know.
Yeah. So you have a personal mission statement that you shared with me the other day about the atmosphere and what you create. And can you just share that with me?
Yeah, I'll give you the backstory on the mission statement because I think it's pretty relevant. My sister and brother-in-law, they had some pretty tough times in their marriage. And she writes about it in their book and everything. And so we were in a meeting and we had all these clients in, and somebody asked my brother-in-law, his name is Jim, how did you deal with your sister, Julie, my sister, Julie, traveling all over the world, you know, because that puts relationship stress. And he said, you know, when I figured out that it was my responsibility to create the environment that would allow her to become the person God created her to become, it just totally changed our relationship. And so I took that and I made my own personal mission statement, which is, my mission is to create the atmosphere, which is, to me, it's bigger than environment. It's spiritual. It can be anywhere. So my mission is to create the atmosphere that allows you to become the person that God created you to become. And of course, in a relationship, the only way it works is if both people in the relationship have that focus for the other one. And so now when I speak or when I'm coaching someone or doing whatever I do, that's kind of that's my prayer before I go in. That's my mission, that I'm there for that person. And I want to, you know, create an idea or something in that person that says, you know what? I can do that. I can step into that. I can grow. I can make a new choice. I can, you know, stop doing the bad thing and start doing the good thing. So that's my goal. That's the backstory. And that's my goal in that mission statement.
I love that. And just implicit in what you were saying there is that you have to make choices though, right? And that's a lot of what you talk about as well. Your book is called Choose to Win, Transform Your Life, One Simple Choice at a Time. And by the way, I'm holding it up. It's really cool. Definitely go get it. And I will make sure I put links to it in both the podcast description and the YouTube description. But tell us about the power of choice.
Yeah, this is how I was raised. And, you know, none of us do. We can't determine what happens to us. You know, life happens. Some people are brought up like I was in a great home and, you know, all the best instruction and, you know, loving family and everything else. Other people come from a broken home. And some people get sick, have an accident. Things in life happen. The career doesn't work out. What we had planned or hoped for doesn't take place. And those are beyond our control. But what is in our control is the choices we make regarding what happens to us. Right? Dad said that it's always better to respond than to react. And one of the things that I like to do is give people the power back. And what does that mean? It means that I have, no matter what happens to me, I get to decide what I'm going to do next. I don't give that power, that authority to anyone else. I take that and I own it. Well, when you own something, there's some responsibility. You know, it's like if you own it, then yeah, you do get the rewards, or good or bad, from that choice. But the good thing is that if we make a decision that doesn't turn out so well, guess what? We got another choice. We can learn from that and make a new decision that takes us in the right direction. So that's what I mean. And when I speak in different places, I'm always surprised at how many people this is like a brand new concept. Like they didn't realize that they do have the choice and it's up to them. And so it's powerful when they accept it.
Yeah, it's so true. And I always think, you know, I want to maybe write a book someday called The Deciding Factor, because like deciding is just makes such a huge difference, right? Just making that choice. But I'm curious to know, you said your dad, you quoted your dad, and I'm sure people are wondering, like, okay, what's it like to grow up in the home with a Zig Ziglar? You know, like, you just said you grew up in a loving home and all that sort of thing. I mean, so it wasn't like, oh, he was this great guy out on stage, but at home he was horrible or anything like that, right? I mean, so, but what's it like? You know, you're a kid and you're just a regular kid. And tell me what's the atmosphere at home?
Yeah, so I tell people he was even better at home than he was on stage. You know, he was amazing in public. And you know, literally, when Dad passed away, we had 13,000 comments on Facebook. And these were like paragraphs long. These were life, you know, the whole story of how their life was changed with their encounter of Zig Ziglar or his material. But as good as all that was, he was even better for us. He was in our corner all the time. And he, you know, he would say things like, you know, like he told me and my sisters, he said, I don't care if you're a speaker or a salesperson or whatever. The only thing that I ask is that whatever you do it with 100% integrity and 100% effort. So he gave us this freedom to go out and choose our own path. When I was 16 years old or 15, I went to apply for a job and I had to fill out this application. And I came to Dad and I said, Dad, look, how am I going to get this job? I don't have any experience. It's my first job. And he said, oh yeah, son, you've got 15 years of experience. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, well, of being honest, of having integrity, of showing up on time, of working hard, of having a good attitude. And he went down all these character qualities that he saw growing in me and said, you've got great experience. And that gave me a lot of encouragement. And so at home, some people are surprised. He was an introvert. He was kind of quiet. He was always writing and everything. But when he was with us, he was 100% in. It was you know, engaged and what's going on and how can I help? And we played a ton of golf together. So I can't imagine any other upbringing because, you know, all of us, that's all we know is the way we were raised. But I look at the way he intentionally prepared us for life. And in every day it's like, oh yeah, I remember that lesson. Like the first one, the biggest lesson I learned from him was to choose my input. And so a lot of times we, you know, we're just surrounded by people and their motives may not always be in our best interest. They might be controlling. They might be telling us what they want us to do for their own benefit. We can surround ourselves with social media and TV and the news and all that stuff. And that's not really good either. And we hang out with people who are primarily negative rather than positive. And all that kind of leads to a life of, well, I'm powerless. I don't have any choice. And yet Dad said, no, we get to choose our input. We choose what we read, what we listen to. We can choose our friends. We can spend more time with people who build us up, who celebrate us, who we are and want us to do well, and less time with that. And usually that's the first choice. A lot of times the people who get the courage to say, you know what, I'm getting out of that, are the ones they start with. They start putting the good stuff in their mind and realizing they do have a choice. And so that was probably the biggest lesson that Dad taught me. You have a choice of what goes into your mind.
Or the people that are around you.
Yeah. And sometimes, you know, family we're born into, we don't have a choice for that. But we can put up boundaries. And then as we grow older, choose what kind of relationship we're going to have and so on. And that's also difficult because a lot of times we don't understand that we have ownership of who we are. And so when we start to value ourselves and understand what healthy really means, and we start making choices in that direction, then it gets easier and easier. And guess what? The people who aren't good for us, the toxic ones, they stick out like a sore thumb in that environment. It becomes really obvious that that's not where the future is.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes, though, when you're dealing with narcissists, most of the time they are extremely charismatic people. So when they start first, you know, popping into your life, they seem like amazing. They seem so wonderful. And they're actually very calculating and manipulating, too. So a lot of times people are taken with them because they know what to do in order to get into their world and set themselves up. So that, you know, now they're like squatters in your life and you can't get them out. It's so hard because you also are in this cycle of hoping that some part of that love bombing or that beginning thing was true, or trying to get that back in some way, or thinking like it's not all bad, but sometimes it's really bad. And so you talk about, you know, first kind of figuring out a vision for yourself and a goal. How do you do that when you're stuck in this craziness world?
Yeah, that does take some work. You know, the easy thing to say is you look at, okay, what is it that I want to accomplish? What's, you know, and I use the kind of the example of three circles, and it's how to discover my why. Okay. And so the first circle at the top is, you know, what am I passionate about? What do I love doing? What is it that if I'm doing it, It's like, I think it's 5 minutes, but it's really been 5 hours that goes by. And as you start to reflect on that, are you with people? Are you an artist? Is it outside? Is it inside? And so you start to get a clue of that passion that's in you. The second is, what kind of problems do people bring you? Like if you're just minding your own business and a friend comes along and says, hey, can you help me with this? Start looking at, okay, what's the type of problem they brought me? And that's a clue to your gift, because people have identified that you're pretty good at something, so they'll bring that problem to you. And the third one is, what's the biggest challenge that you've overcome? When you look at your life, then you've obviously, nobody's had the perfect life. Everybody's had an obstacle or challenge. Some of it happens to you. Some of it, you made a bad choice and you created it and you've had to overcome the consequences. And when those three things overlap, the passion for what you want to do, your gift and your talent, and the obstacle that you've overcome, that's a good place to look for your why.
Coming up, more on Negotiate Your Best Life with Rebecca Zahn.
So now we've got a high standard. So what happens if the person you're in a relationship with, if their behavior is contrary to that mission? You can have the conversation, hey, help me understand how you're treating me helps me fulfill my mission.
When it comes to the safety of a child in a divorce case involving alcohol abuse, there is no compromise. Take back power, strength, and truth from the narcissist in your life with documented proof of sobriety. SoberLink's alcohol monitoring system is the most convenient, reliable, and reasonable way for a parent to provide evidence that they are not drinking when a child's safety is at risk. SoberLink's real-time alerts make it easy to negotiate with any party. Judges can rest assured that the child is safe. Attorneys get court-admissible evidence of sobriety, and both parents have empowerment and peace of mind. Get an exclusive $50 off your device by emailing info@soberlink.com and mentioning Negotiate Your Best Life podcast. Are you struggling with how to negotiate and win? Maybe you're dealing with a personality that's particularly challenging, like a narcissist or other high-conflict personality, and you're feeling powerless. Make sure to download my free Win My Negotiation cheat sheet at www.winmynegotiation.com.
Take a listen to our archive, where you can listen to more episodes that show you the path to how to negotiate your best life.
The key to doing anything is really to have great confidence in yourself, but not necessarily in yourself because you're a wonderful human being, but yourself because you're actually doing something that aligns very strongly with your values, and aligns very strongly with your skills, and is important and useful. So belief in what you do can become belief in who you are, which I think is very important.
And now we return to today's show.
The second thing that you want to do, and this is very, very common, and this is one of the main reasons that people stay stuck, is they have never really spent time asking themselves, who do I want to become and what do I want people to say about me behind my back? So let's just say you want people to say about you behind your back that you're hardworking, you're loyal, you have an amazing amount of integrity, you're trustworthy, you're loving, you're kind. I mean, these are all great things. And so you start to claim those words, right? Those character qualities, you start to claim those. And then you identify the habits that you can create in your life that will help those character qualities grow. And so let's just say kindness is one of them. So what you could do is you could start in your relationships with other people asking questions that would uncover some interesting things about that person, and just show a genuine interest in them. There's nothing more kind than generally being interested in someone. And people love it when you talk about them. So now, if this is what you value, you've got to ask yourself the next question, which is, the people who are predominantly in my life, are they helping me grow in these directions, or are they holding me back? And that is a big one. So a young man, his name is Caleb Miller. I was with his grandfather, Dan Miller. And Caleb said, so Tom, how do you know if you have a bad habit? And I thought, what a great question. And I said, well, you may not know. And he said, what do you mean? I said, well, if your goal was to get cancer, then smoking would be a good habit, wouldn't it? And so you have to have a clearly identified goal or dream or purpose that you are aspiring towards to know whether something in your life is a good habit or a bad habit, is positive or negative. If you don't know where you're going, what you stand for, the values that you hold dear, the things that are important to you, if you don't know what those are, then it's hard to really judge if other people are helping you get there or holding you back. But once you identify those, then you have that place. So first, you look at that sweet spot in those three circles of what it is I want to focus my attention on. And second, you identify the person you need to become around those values in order to make that happen.
And once you do that, though, it's kind of hard because I think I've had to deal with this in my own life a couple of times, you know, where you go, okay, well, then that means that this person probably needs to go. And maybe it's a family member or maybe it's a spouse. It's almost like once you figure that out and you have that vision and you make that decision and you've chosen that who you are person, then you got to go, what's going to help me get there and what's going to impede me from getting there? And if it's going to impede me, including if it's a person, then how do I get them out? You know, I mean, that's the real, difficulty, I think, sometimes.
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question. And not all things are deal breakers. You know, it's my dream in life might be a mountain cabin and my wife's dream might be a beachside cottage, right? I mean, that's a little bit different scenario than, just being trapped into a situation where you can't grow, where you can't be the person that God created you to become. So how do you address that? One of the things that we do in the business world that also can apply in a relationship is we'll tell a business, what's your mission statement? And let's just suppose the mission statement is to create the most phenomenal customer experience possible, a simple mission statement. And then somebody on the team does a behavior that's totally out of line. They blow up, they yell, they do something to another team member or to a client. And now as a leader, you got to step in. And so you ask the question, hey, do you know what our mission statement is? Well, yeah. Okay, would you repeat it to me? Oh, to provide the most phenomenal customer experience possible. Okay, well, help me understand how that behavior is going to allow us to provide that phenomenal customer experience. And so you make the confrontation. It's not about between you and them. In this case, it's between them and the mission statement of the business. So in a relationship, one of the things what should happen is early on in the relationship, both sides should say, hey, this is my mission. I'm on a mission in life. This is my why. This is my purpose. This is what I want to become. I'm looking for a life partner who's going to help me do that. Do you buy into that? Well, yeah, because everything is love and dove, right? Everything is good. It's on the up. Fantastic. So you're going to help me along that path. Well, yeah, completely. So now we've got a high standard. So what happens if the person you're in a relationship with, if their behavior is contrary to that mission? You can have the conversation, hey, help me understand how you're treating me helps me fulfill my mission. And that is a simple tool. I wish it was easier to do than it is to think about. But the thing is you can't have that conversation at all until you know exactly what it is you stand for and where you want to go. That's why I like in the idea of a relationship that we get the sequence right, right? We talk about our principles and our values and what we stand for and what's important to us at the very beginning of the relationship before we're emotionally entangled and all the other things that go on. And usually in the Western world, we do it backwards, right? We get attracted to the physical and the emotional and all those things before we talk about our faith, what kind of family we want to have, and how we treat money.
Yeah. And if it's in a business relationship, you know, do you have integrity? What is your, you know, how do you feel about how we treat clients versus making money or, you know, those kinds of things? I mean, you had said something about the opposite of depression isn't happiness. It's purpose. Can you talk more about that?
Yeah, one of my mentors is Rabbi Daniel Lappin. And so that's actually a quote of his. He said, you know, the opposite of depression is not happiness, it's purpose. And so in our society today, in the world, we've been lied to. And the lie is this, hey, it, you know, whatever it is, just do it. Feel good. It's about you being happy. If it feels good, do it. And so we make all these decisions based on our short-term happiness. And then we tell everybody, well, your truth is your truth and their truth is their truth. And there's all kinds of truth. And as long as you're happy and feeling good, then everything's good. Well, there's a problem with that. And I'll talk about the two problems. The first one is this. If we are conditioned to being happy and that's our ultimate goal, and then something like the pandemic hits, and our whole life is disrupted. We can't go to work like we did. We're working from home. There's kids home from school. They're running in the background. You know, maybe our spouse has lost their job and we're going nuts. And we're like, oh, I'm not happy. And so you think, well, what can I do to get happy? Well, what do the stats tell us? You're going to eat cheesecake. You're going to binge on Netflix. You know, it could be alcohol. It could be drugs. All of these things that lead to the spiral down. And so we know these quick fixes don't create happiness. But let's revisit that question. The opposite of depression is purpose. If we know the direction that we want to go and we know our purpose, then we get to move towards that. And the byproduct of that is happiness. The closer we get to our purpose, happiness just comes out of that. It occurs. The other thing, and this is a sad reality, and I think you're probably the expert in this, is some people's happiness is derived by controlling and making other people unhappy. Right?
Yep. Oh, yeah.
So if it feels good to you, do it. We've just given somebody permission to make somebody else happy. One of the litmus tests in business is this. I learned this from a business consultant and speaker named Joe Calhoun. I said, Joe, is there any time where you would just fire somebody on the spot besides, you know, murder or something like that? And he said, well, there is a case that I like to look at, and that is when somebody makes a decision at the expense of someone else. In other words, I make a decision that benefits me and costs you. That's probably not somebody we want on our team. And I think we can look at that in relationships as well. In a solid, healthy relationship, it's not that we don't make mistakes. It's just that we never actively, intentionally do things that benefit us at someone else's expense. And when we put other people in an emotional state that's negative for our own satisfaction, that's the definition of toxicity.
Yeah. And you know, when we were talking the other day, we were talking about how a really good question to ask yourself is if something great happens to you, if you have something to celebrate about, is the person wanting to celebrate with you? Are they happy for you? And that's a really great, as you know, you were talking about litmus tests. That's a good one too. you know, or are they like angry? Do they want to make you feel bad because you did something amazing, right? Or you're happy about something?
Yeah, and there's a lot of depth into that. And the reality is that, you know, in life, we want love, we want respect, we want companionship, we want these different things. And if I care about and love someone, then a great day for me is to know that they've won, they've had success, they've had a victory, they're moving towards their purpose. And so let's draw the line. So I'll just tell you my personality. In the DISC, the D-I-S-C personality style, I'm an S, okay? I'm a people pleaser. And it's real easy for me to try to make everybody else happy without taking care of myself. And so I can be set up and taken advantage of probably more easy or easier than some other personality styles, right? Because that's just my nature. Where do you want to eat? I don't care. Where do you want to eat? I mean, that's the way I answer that question. And so my true friends know that about me. And every now and then they'll just kind of like put their hand on my shoulder and say, no, Tom, we really want to know where you want to eat. This, why don't you pick? Okay. Well, that's huge, right? Because that is someone who's putting my needs up at the top of the list, which I don't feel comfortable doing that. The other side of that coin is it's easy to allow others to take advantage of you and to trample all over that. And when that starts to happen, as you feel less and less and less about yourself, it becomes more and more difficult to do that. So that's why I go back to that standard. What is the standard you have for yourself? And what is the standard by which you treat other people, that you treat other people? And most of the time, a good person will have a high standard of how they'll treat other people. So then you've got to draw the line and say, will you allow anybody to treat you less than what you would treat them? Maybe once, maybe twice, but after that, that's where you draw the line. And so that's in my own life, knowing that that's my my default to overtrust is I know how I treat people. And the first time I get treated less than I would have treated somebody, I like mark that down. The second time I'm like, we're not going there again.
Yeah. It reminds me of the quote of Maya Angelou, when people show you who they are, believe them the first time, you know, it's such a great quote, but most of us don't believe them the first time. It does take several, yeah. Unfortunately, but that's a beautiful, beautiful way to end this. It was like so perfect. Everything that you were saying sort of led up to that one really incredible point. And so where can people learn more about you, your programs, what you have to offer, your Instagram? Give us all of it, and we'll make sure it's all in your in our bios as well.
You bet. We have about 6 million fans on our Zig Ziglar Facebook page. So if you're looking for some inspiration or just to check up from the neck up, that's a great place to go. Ziglar.com is our website.
I love that. Check up from the neck up.
Yes.
I just want to make sure that got heard. Okay. Go ahead.
A checkup of the neck up to prevent hardening of the attitudes.
Love it. Okay, so Instagram, go ahead, Ziglar Institute.
Yeah, Ziglar, I think it's the Zig Ziglar on Instagram, Twitter is Zig Ziglar. So pretty much if you just search Zig Ziglar on any of the channels, you'll find us. And then Ziglar.com is our website. And then my email is tom@ziglar.com. So I'm kind of one of these weird people who answers email. And you know what we're about is encouraging, transforming, equipping, and supporting people who want to make a difference in the lives of other people through coaching, speaking, and training. That's our primary business. We've got 5 decades of life-changing content, and there are so many ways to deploy that and to use it to help someone else be or do have more than they thought possible. And so that's what we do. So we are really set up to support and encourage people whose life mission is to make a difference in the lives of other people.
Yeah. So if anybody's out there listening and you're thinking, what am I going to do next? Where am I going next? If you're interested in maybe becoming a coach or just learning the principles on how to encourage other people, go check out their courses, check out their materials. Make sure you follow him on Instagram, like him on Facebook, you know, become part of the Ziglar community. I highly recommend it. It's many, many years of proven track record. You know, this is not a fly-by-night thing here. So definitely go check it all out. Thank you so much, Tom, for this invaluable, incredible wisdom and taking your time to share it with us.
Thank you so much, Rebecca.
Thanks for stopping by and listening to this episode of Negotiate Your Best Life. I'm Rebecca Zung. Check back next Monday for more inspirational pearls of wisdom. And if you enjoyed today's podcast, I'd love if you would give it a 5-star rating and tell me what you liked in a review on iTunes. Also, be sure to grab your winning negotiation cheat sheet at winmynegotiation.com. And remember, today is a perfect day to start negotiating your best life.